Hey, what's up, guys? This is Lucas Burnley. I'm here with my co-host TJ Schwartz, and you are listening to the Edge and Flow podcast. How's it going, man?
Going great.
It's
It's
the last
Christmas
one.
week. Merry Christmas to everyone out there.
Yeah, happy holidays. Officially our last episode of the year. We're still being a little spotty. Do you know how many episodes we actually got out?
So for this year or
Yeah. For this
oh
year.
shoot. It's got to be in the 20-ish range, if I had to
Yeah,
guess.
that feels
Maybe.
somewhere right.
Yeah. We're about almost at 100. I think this might be 99 or 98.
That's fun.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Yeah, a little bit more spread out of a schedule, but it's all good. So we were just talking before we jumped on a little bit, kind of like where we are at and how we're finishing out the year. This is a big year.
Yeah.
Like, what were the, for you on your side, what were like the biggest changes? Was this like a steady year?
Yeah, this was the first full year in the new shop with sort of like the wish list that we had when we were in the garage.
Crazy.
So in the garage, it was always, we would do this if we could, but we're going to
Yeah.
do it this way because that's all we can do right now. And this year was sort of like, okay, we're going to check all the boxes off the wish list and see what's possible. And so now we're sort of at like the point of maturing all that. So it feels like we're a production company, not a like prototype of a production company anymore, if that makes sense.
That makes sense.
So it was a major year in that regard, yeah.
Off the top, is there anything that didn't align with what you thought or planned? Like,
Let me think for a second. I mean the major thing that we're doing different than in the garage is the bevel grinding.
yeah.
And it just can't be understated how big of a difference that made for us. In a way, it was almost better than expected, I would say. So I think that is where, I can't think of anything we're doing right now that we didn't plan in the garage, but I don't know if we planned for the bevel grinding to be as good as it is, which is
That's
strange.
great.
I love that process. It's
That
yeah,
which we're getting ready to start, which makes me even happier
yeah.
because I don't really know what's coming down the line with it, but you've been helping me figure out the process, and I've got the fixture mostly designed, so the Kihoku should be being bevel ground soon.
Yeah.
Cup wheel, reeve grinding.
Reeve grinding. Yeah, Reeve's gift to
The
humanity.
industry,
Yeah.
along with a few others.
Yeah.
Okay. So, first full year. So, we're basically coming into that. We're ending the year going into the new shop, which I would guess probably feels about like what it did for you switching shops. Like, it's weird, man.
Yeah, and I saw you had your older machine on a forklift the other day.
So it's out. So that machine I've had in my shop since 2012. I don't know, like, dude, these things, you're around them every single day. So like removing something that took up a quarter of my workshop felt really weird.
Yeah.
Like, and just seeing it go, and like it's still, I know I still have it, but it's not like not where I'm working, and it's a strange shift. But yeah, so now we've got the two machines over there, we've got the Kaiser air compressor, and we're starting to build out like the rest of the infrastructure. I've got my last second to last session with the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Program tomorrow. So we're finishing basically a 3 month project with them, kind of around our processes and kind of like how to set up the new shop, which we got a grant for that, and it's been amazing.
Yeah.
It's a good reminder to like see what options are out there, 'cause like we do so much of this stuff kind of like on our own and with our friends, like as resources, and you forget, you're like, you're in a state, you're doing business. there's a good chance that there's an organization
Yeah.
that wants to help you do more business.
Yeah, especially manufacturing these days. There's a
Absolutely.
vested interest all across the board in
Yeah.
propping up as much of that as possible. So yeah, that's great. I haven't
It's
looked into that
pretty
enough.
neat.
I
It's
should.
pretty neat. So I know OMEP is in, I think they're in ev or some version of it might be in each state.
IMAP.
Yeah, it's like something there's some variation. I'll ask Shane tomorrow.
Yeah.
Cause that would be a great resource.
Yeah, it would.
And it's dude, it is. It's just, I think like anything we're doing, you're looking at like correcting for blind spots, right? That's all. Like we're just adding information and skill sets that we don't maybe natively possess. I will say, and this has been ridiculous the whole time, we're working through things and I'm like, this is how TJ does it. Like it's nuts. So you're whatever you're seeing and doing or have learned, it really does tie in with like seems like a lot of best practices around manufacturing.
I've been fortunate to absorb a lot from guys like Jay Pearson and John Saunders and some of these guys that manufacturing is their thing. They're not knife makers. They're like they're manufacturers also in the manufacturing space because they're making work clothing. So their customers are manufacturers. So talking to, or not talking to, but listening to people like that, they just have their fingers on the pulse because they're designing systems for other manufacturers. And when they say like this is how a lean workflow works, it's because they're not only doing it themselves, but they are touring other shops. They're doing installs. They're, you know, looking at other people's shops, recommending products to make things better. So I listen, you know, Jay Pearson has a great YouTube channel. Listen to that. The Business and Machining podcast that I've talked about a lot. And it's like there's a best practice that's sort of out there that I was lucky to absorb some of. Still have a long way to go, but it's good stuff.
I fought it kicking and screaming.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Like we in the meeting last week, I told him, I'm like, when we started this, I told you like I want to be inefficient so I can be, or I want to be efficient so I can be inefficient.
Yeah.
Like that is my goal, you know? But I think we're getting closer. It's really helped me understand. I think one of the biggest shifts for with any type of scaling is that I'm actually not supposed to do it all by myself. Just that, like as we're looking at like how to lay out production schedules and stuff, and I'm panicking, and he's like, dude, this isn't just you. Like, this is the shop schedule. Here's you. This window here is you. Okay. Like, just it's just like small shifts.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
That is exciting. It's cool. I'm ex it's great that that shop's working out for you and you got your machines over there and
I just want to start working
did you
it.
wire up the machine that was
Yes,
moved?
new
Yeah.
machine is wired. Yeah, dude, have an awesome electrician.
Good.
Did a beautiful job. Are you electricians like can do really nice work.
Yeah.
If you get one that cares enough, like the conduit on the wall and the way that they ran it, they gave me flexibility in like how the machine. I was like, I don't know exactly where it's going to end up, but it's probably within this 18 inch, you know, line.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
so they were like, okay, we're going to do hard conduit to the wall. And there's a garage door over it, low ceiling. I can't have the wiring go up to this, you know, the ceiling. So they like hard conduit off the wall over to the machine, but then did that on like a slider so I can
Wow.
move the whole machine forward if I want. And there's like a flex cable over. Really sweet.
That's sweet, dude.
I know, I nerded
Yeah.
out. I was
Yeah,
like, that's excellent.
there's definitely an art in electrical work, that's for sure.
Dude. You see it when you open like sub panels
Yes.
and you're like, this person, that's the you had OCD, and like
Yeah.
then there's like a
This
rat's
person did
nest.
not. Yeah.
Like you knew like some basics, and yeah, that's
Yeah, the
scary.
shop we're in right now, the panel, I haven't seen anything clearly unsafe, but it's been the thing is our shop has been a machine shop and an auto shop and all this stuff. And most of those people know how to mess with panels because if you are
Enough.
enough that it doesn't look unsafe from what I can gather, but I'd install some wiring for our new oven. And I was looking at it, I was like, yeah, this is not as clean as some I've seen, that's for sure.
The enough thing really is, man, it's tricky. When the Kaser tech was there, I was like, hey, man, let me ask you a question. What do you think of this? And I showed him the installed air system. And he was like, if you were asking me to hook up to this, I wouldn't be able to do it. The previous owner of the shop ran PVC
Oh,
through the walls
inside the walls.
inside. So he
Oh my
took the
gosh.
time to run a looped air system that is beautiful and has ports everywhere. Except he did it in PVC, which basically gets brittle and explodes
Yeah, inside of a wall, no less.
inside of a wall, which is probably better. But he had like drops out of the ceiling
That's
and
cool.
like, yeah. So
Well,
enough.
one thing to circle back on, though, is we talked about a long time ago on a podcast, we were talking about PEX pipe for air, like Home Depot water pipe, stupid simple tools, you know them, SST. They're getting into the business of making fittings for PEX to
For
air,
PEX for air.
which is
Smart.
super interesting.
Yeah.
Because we started using PEX for air, and it wasn't really like supported as like an air solution. I just knew
Right.
that a lot of people were doing it. And now it's like actually becoming a supported aftermarket
Yeah.
solution.
'Cause it's like 200 PSI, right?
It's either 200 or 300, I can't remember, but the thing about it is it's designed when frozen with water in
Right.
it to crack and not
Right.
explode.
Right.
So that's one of the advantages of it. And then obviously the availability, but
Yeah.
we've been using that.
We're still using the Rapid Air, which I love, but I also like aesthetically, like it doesn't droop, like it's cool looking. But when I went on Amazon to buy it this time, there's like, I think like two or three knockoffs. It wasn't, I just bought Max Air again. It's not crazy expensive. The fittings are really good, but there's like half price options now
When
too.
I someday when we own our shop again, we rent this shop, I would go Rapid Air. That stuff looks really good.
Pretty sweet. Yeah, man. So that's like my that's big. My brain has been pretty split because I'm trying to focus on setting up the new shop, but not really being able to work in it. Right. We have the one machine running. Now we're good. We've got the second machine like leveled. We're ready to run. We just haven't yet, and we like finished right before the holiday. So I think we're gonna hit the ground running. But also trying to like stay up on production. And that's definitely been kind of tricky because it's like we're doing the work in shop A, but need to switch as many things to shop B as possible. So it's kind of an interesting, yeah, it's an interesting, I guess it is something like the two space thing is harder than I thought it would be. It like made more sense initially to be like, oh, we're just gonna move the machines and have finishing and like, but it actually has thrown some like wrenches in the overall like efficiency.
Is it like tools you didn't expect where now you need two of them kind of thing?
It's like it's basically reality is minor inconvenience, but they're speed bumps where you're just like having to like do these like small problem solving things kind of constantly or like forgetting like, oh, that's over there. So that's been one of the big things with OMAP is they're basically trying to get us to where like the Kihoku, the turn, and a few other things are just fully produced in that other shop, with the exception of maybe like, you know, some of the EDC stuff coming back over here for like higher end finishes. Yeah, it's got that. What else, man?
There's a little bit of meat there because we don't have the same problem, but similar in that the shop's not at our house and we renovate our house all the time. I guess we're just like addicted to it or something. And and so I'm always bringing tools back and forth
Yeah,
because it's
same.
like there's a lot of tools. I'm not buying two of those things, you know what I mean? Like, or whatever. And we don't have the space really at our house to have like duplicates of like, a miter saw or whatever. And so I haven't fully done it yet, but I want to set up like go bags or go boxes for like processes. Because I'll need to mess around with like a light switch or something over there. And it's like I'll come and grab like, oh, I need this, I need this, I need this. I have like an electrical drawer and I'm gonna start taking things out. It's like I don't want an electrical drawer, I want an electrical box. And it's like wire nuts, you know, test
Yeah, on
meter.
like a show, like it, like you could do like the Milwaukee like organizer
Yeah, the
boxes
pack outs.
on,
Yeah.
yeah, like the pack outs on a rack in the shop, but then able to grab one. Or you could just like build out a contractor's trailer,
I
because
know.
that's
Yeah.
like even better.
I know. I know. Yeah, that's I've started to think a lot about that. And because it's like, you know, in-laws will ask me like they had a pellet stove issue and they're like, "Will you come fix it?" It's all electrical. The number of times where I'm like, I thought I had what I need, gotta go back, and it's all electrical. It's like should all that should all be in the same bin. I should have all the wrenches in the same, you know. And I have it organized here, but it's not ready to just grab.
No,
You
I
know what I
get it.
mean?
Yeah.
So
So that's
I don't know.
exactly, but that's exactly what we're running into. Just that,
Yeah.
like my main toolboxes are over here. We're like putting things together in the new shop, and I'm just like, oh, like I don't
Yeah.
have what I need,
Yeah.
you
Yeah. You
know?
just running back and forth for like a socket or whatever. It's a pain.
That's ex
Yeah.
yeah. So hopefully that'll stop. The biggest upside of this all has been that the like a part of the goal was to get me back really thinking about like learning and custom and different process, manual process stuff. And so that has pulling the machine just gave us a lot more floor space. And so it's feeling uncramped. And I have like a dedicated like forging hot work, like fabrication area, which is removing the speed bumps. 'Cause it was like before, it's like if I wanted to play with forging, I would have to move a bunch of stuff and kind of like have this small space. And now it's the blocks are off.
Yeah, the studio is becoming a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really want to do a series of content that is just me talking shit about the knife maker across the street. Like bladesmith versus
Yeah.
CNC,
Look at
just
all
like,
that automation over there.
yeah,
No
dude, like,
soul. Yeah.
ah, dude, I want to
That's
do
so
it so
good.
bad.
That's
I
so
think I'd
good.
really make some people mad because they'd probably only see one of the two videos, and it's just
Yeah.
but it's like, I'm gonna do
Yeah, on one side you need like you need to put your leather apron on and it gets rub some like charcoal on your face, and then other side wears
100%,
have some like latex gloves and like a white
dude.
coat.
Yeah,
Yeah.
button up and gloves and
Yeah.
like overalls and a bandana.
Yeah.
That's gonna happen. It's gonna make me so happy.
Yeah, that's a
But
good
yeah,
one. I like that.
that's been pretty fun. We were talking a little bit earlier. So we haven't said the process is the product for a while, right? But I had it reminded. I got reminded. I was reminded of that. So Nick Rossi, good friend, has a course on how to forge a kitchen knife. Okay. And as I've been like starting to get the forging going, I reached out to him and Jason Knight and asked like, what's the project that I need to be doing as a skill builder to like just be able to do quickly and efficiently, but like just learn? Both of them said kitchen knives. Okay. So I follow along Nick's process. And what was crazy is like, this looks like one of Nick's knives. It's got this little like dip here and a swell, and like the tip height is the same. And it makes perfect sense because you're watching the way that he is shaping and you end up at the same place. It, I don't know, man. It's just like you see why knife makers that learn from a knife maker, I don't even think it's design. I literally think it's movement. You learn to move in a way, and that movement just yields the result.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And the better the process is, the stickier it is for the style that comes out of it. And Nick spent so much time figuring out basically a workflow for a forged kitchen knife that the process is like dialed. If you do it, you end up here, right? And this is like forged to shape, like thin bevels, distal taper, tapered tang, like all these things that are actually really, really tricky to do from a bar, just like a, you know, 3/16 by, you know, like 7-inch bar.
Right, right.
Yeah. You put the hammer in the place, it does the thing, it gives you the line. That's why I think why, like, Loveless, that's why there's so many Loveless kind of like apostates. Mm-hmm. And clones, because the process for making a Loveless knife was so dialed and so documented that that's what you ended up with.
Yeah, and I've always thought, like, even in design itself, even if you're not making it,
yeah,
the number of times where you're designing something and you're like, I have an interference with the stop pin, I need to open up that choil or something,
and then you're like,
and you open it up and you're like, dang. Ah, that's exactly this other knife. And it's like you have followed their consciousness to that decision. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've found that, especially with folders, it gets hard sometimes where you're trying to avoid the obvious decisions, but it's like, they're obvious for a reason, because that's the right way to do it.
Because it's actually the right way to do it in a size, in a mechanism. Yeah. You see, it's really interesting because it gives you like a weird historical context.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is like where machines shift, right? So like when makers were doing more work on buffers, you get work that looks like it came off of a buffer,
mm-hmm.
right? So like 60s, 70s, the range of abrasives wasn't available. The range of machines wasn't available. And so, like, you've got these things where you're like, oh, yeah, it's got like buffed over like plunges.
Yeah.
Cause you're fixing something.
Yeah.
You know,
and
these big shifts.
And if you take that a step further, one of the things that illustrates, in my opinion, is one of the ways to have something different is to have different tools.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's like if you can imagine bringing a tool in from some other industry, like you've seen guys where, Todd Begg was a good example of this, where he's like, he read books about tool and die making and bought tools from tool and die making catalogs.
Yep.
And his knives didn't look like other people's knives, the way they were polished. And it's to your point, it's like if you bring tools in and processes in from other industries or that other knife makers aren't using, like, it's not just that you're more efficient, it's not just that you have better finishes or whatever it is, it's like you actually land at different sets of optimization.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just a different sort of local maximum of design. And it's interesting when you see people playing with that.
I think that's why I've always liked jumping around, right? It's inefficient in the moment a lot of times, but it gives potentialities downstream because you're able to like link it back to a skill. Did they call that exaptation?
I haven't heard that.
Adaptation is the ability, like you're adapting to a situation.
Mm-hmm.
Exaptation, I believe, is taking a trait that's already there and reassigning it.
Mm.
And I think that like as a maker, I think a lot of times that's what we're doing. You're like,
yeah.
And you see it, right? You see it with people that have backgrounds that were already there and then take on a new, you know, hobby or process. It's like all of those old skills are like upgrading your system
mm-hmm.
for what you're doing or giving you a method that might not be like the standard method.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It is very cool. I love that.
I sent you a video. One thing that I've really liked. So forging for me right now, I'm not interested in forging like almost anything that I can do stock removal for. Right. So my goal is not like to make super refined, like tactical knives or something. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. But forging to shape is insane. Right. Because you're literally just playing with fiery clay.
Yeah.
But then tying it in with precision. So this is like an exaptation thing. I've thought about precision for so long and like uniformity and like just consistency that the Cole Ironworks press that I got that has a DRO on it.
It's crazy.
Is one of the most satisfying tools I think that I've played with. Like being able to like look at it and be like, I want this stock to be 125 thousandths thick, and you like program it, boop, 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 and the press does it.
That's so sweet.
Feels so tied into the way that I've worked, but then you're like, you're combining like precision and just like chaos magic. Like fire and squish with precision. Like that's
That's
pretty
awesome.
cool.
I've always thought, I'm like, you don't see it very often, but you would be a perfect candidate to try it. Is like, how could you forge something and it then go into a CNC and it makes sense, and you're not doing it because you can, but you're doing it because it does something
Because
special.
the process, yeah, I think there are a few people kind of doing this, and I think the areas where it's giving like interesting results would be like in like patterning Damascus or, but dude, there's so much. Like I keep thinking, I'm like, oh, you could pattern Damascus with a laser. Like if you can do raindrop with a drill press, you can throw a bar of Damascus into a laser, do a deep engrave, reforge it, have those images come up through the surface layer. Like this is where it starts to just be pretty crazy. I was thinking like one area I saw reasonable would be handles. So forging out a blade, you have if you want to do like a hidden tang or something, and then having like a mortise tang handle that you run on the CNC,
And like
you
machine the
can
tang of the blade or something.
yeah, machine the tang or even hand grind it to size. I think there's I'm pretty excited to play with more of that. It's
The
just
other
cool, man.
thing is, what I love about forging is that in stock removal, you're always stuck with maximum thicknesses for your stuff.
Yes.
And it's like you look at a forged knife and you're like, look at that bolster. The plunge on
Yeah.
the grind goes all the way up, and the thing's like
Yeah.
3/4 inch thick for a bolster. And I'm
Yeah.
like, I'm so jealous of that on the
Yeah.
forging side. And so that's something I've always thought of, like, well, what if I've watched videos, how it's made, where they drop forge a
Yeah.
hammer or something, and then
Yeah.
they like grind other parts. And it's like, could you drop forge the blade to get the bolster, then CNC mill the tang to get like a cool bolster shape?
Yeah. Well,
Because
I
the
mean, that's like
thickness.
RMJ, dude, is a great example of this. So, on the machining side, that is great, but Ryan's forging background, I think, really informed a lot of it. And it's like I think the original Tomahawks were like drop forged first, then CNC'd. And it's like those two skill sets like combined to make like arguably the sickest like breaching hawk, you know, they're so good. And it is, it's that combination where you're like, oh, you've got like this kind of, I don't know, I don't think it's the handles were injection molded, but it's like a maybe a similar process. But then on this like just beast of a forged blank, and it does, it cuts down. Like you think Nick had told me, he's like around stock. I was like, what sizes do I need in the shop? He's like, well, you have a press and a hammer, so like he's like, if you have 1 inch square stock, you can basically make anything. It's like,
That's a good point.
right, because you can just make your own like sizes.
That's where I think forging is super interesting, is that right there. Because
Well,
in
and it was,
CNC, it's a bounding box, and so your shapes always sort of corresponds. Like we said earlier, if you look
right.
at stock removal knives, there's
Yeah.
always a flatness to them, always in some
Right.
fashion. You can curve things, but unless you're going to start with like some crazy thickness and grind 80% of it away to have one
Right.
feature that protrudes or something,
Yeah.
it's flat. It just is.
Well, and that takes it into a different area of knife making. It's like if you look at the 80s makers like Kronk, you know, and Luckett, those guys did like huge huge stock removal. Right?
Interesting.
But they were art knives primarily. Like Edmund Davidson does integrals, but they're machined integrals. So you're starting off with a bar of steel that's 3/4 of an inch thick instead of like starting off with this and then you're upsetting an area. Dude, it's just, I think that some of the forging stuff around tool making is the area that's like most sticky for me, because
Yeah.
they do things like progressive dies or like, you know, open face, you know, with like forming tools, but it was production.
Yeah.
So there's
And
something
still is for,
incredibly that it still is,
yeah. Yeah.
right. Pre-forms and all these other things, like forging is still happening, right? But the ability to just go and be like, I need a hammer. I'm gonna forge a hammer. Like that to me is the more interesting side, I guess, for me than making knives, is just literally being able to design and move things in a uniform way. Like
Yeah.
literally change the shape, not remove the shape.
Yeah.
Have you done any forging?
No, I've been exposed to it quite a bit, but I've not
Yeah, you've been
really
around
done
it,
it.
but you
Yeah.
haven't done it.
No.
Dude, we'll have to do that at
I
some
need
point.
to.
That's it's so we're still watching Forged in Fire with the boys, and it's great because they're super opinionated now.
Yeah, that's good.
They're like, no, look at it. That no, he's gonna
Yeah.
fail.
Yeah.
There's D-Lam in the blade. That's not gonna make it. And I'm like,
That's great.
but as I've been forging, Bo's been coming out in the morning, and he loves it. He's
Yeah.
super interested. I've been like, we'll do stuff like he'll run the pedal on the press, and just starting to kind of get him used to like being around the machines and like, okay, everything. It's like teaching firearm safety. You're like, dude, everything's hot. If you touch this, if you grab a set of tongs from the tong part, you're gonna burn your hand.
Yeah.
Like how to test for heat, like
Just
all these
because it's not
little things.
orange doesn't mean it's not going to burn you. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot, like, so just little things. But what's cool about it is there's a way in. Whereas like right now, I'll do 3D printing with them, and when we're doing that, like they're moving the mouse, they're seeing where some like steps are in the printer, but they're not controlling anything. It's too abstract, right? Same with the CNC. Like they'll come in and fire up the machines with me. But this is actually something where it's like, I can kind of like give him a hammer and like a little piece of square stock and be like, dude, try to put a point on it. You know?
That's sweet.
So yeah. that has, I think right now, moving the machines and starting the forge felt like the culmination of the year.
It seems like you could get like bar stock that's lead
Yeah.
and train kids on lead or
You
something like
don't let
that.
kids have lead. We've been
Well,
through this.
yeah, that's valid.
You're like, here's a lead candy bar.
Yeah,
My
it's
kid
not
puts
hot, but
everything
it
in his
will
mouth. It's
poison
not
you.
hot, but like, get your fingers out of your mouth. Dude, I mean, reality, you could use Play-Doh.
Yeah,
It
you could.
moves. That's the crazy thing, is it like it moves the same way.
That's super interesting. You definitely
It's
could.
weird. It's really
Or
weird.
solid gold, clearly, would be the ideal.
I like it. We're like, okay, we give our children lead or gold. Yeah, man. I don't know.
That's how I'd have to start.
That's
Then
we'll start you with lead when you
you don't
turn
have a
18.
time limit.
Dude, it feels good. I don't know. All this stuff. It's this is this year for a lot of people that I know. I feel like it's like quiet pushing, but I just feel like this year, like people have made some big gains, like leveling up, like regardless of where that area is, it just feel, I don't know, maybe it always happens, but this year, just like I know enough people that are close to me that I've seen like either prove out a concept or make a shift or like do new buildings or whatever it is, set up a new project. And just it feels like in a time where we're hearing a lot about like the economy and like even in the knife industry, we hear a lot about how it's like a little slower than usual and sales are down. It's like, it's cool to see maybe some infrastructure that isn't just sales related, like being built.
Yeah, well,
Like the quiet work is being done.
and there's this feeling I have, which is that I was in the industry for close to a decade before I really started manufacturing. And so it's like, I feel like that's a huge blessing because I kind of have this sense of like, it's like when you first start into an industry, you think this is how it is. This is how the industry is. And it takes like roller coaster of time to understand, like, no, this is a moving target at all times and it takes a while. It's like I already kind of had that sensation just from the design side of things and understanding talking to makers, being at knife shows. So it's like going into manufacturing, it's like we're buckling up because I know what this is, you know. And it, obviously, there's tons of things that happen that aren't predictable. But it's like you can know that it's like you're going to be adapting. You just are. If you're in a position where you don't feel like you're ever going to have to adapt, like you're missing something. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, that is, we're not a steady state. Like, even if you have like stability or product that is like really well, yeah, we all gets a timeline, I think, right? Which is something that is easy to like kind of overthink about, because I think a lot of it is actually happening organically. We're changing as the industry is changing. We're changing as what we're seeing, even subconsciously or feeling in the industry. And the crazy part is that the more years you have, I think the more of that just starts to run as like a little subscript. Like you're just, it's just in the background helping you inform decisions. But that's your up and down thing, right? Is like at a, you come in and you're like preconceived notions or the way that you think it works. And then it starts to actually just like happen, you know, and you adapt. Do you have any predictions?
Predictions.
Yeah, for next
Ooh.
year.
That's a tough one. Oh man, I can't say. Honestly, it's I struggle with future predictions. I think we've had this conversation before, and I don't apply myself to thinking about the
I
future, which
know.
sounds
I
weird.
know, and that's why I ask. I know this is not where you're spending your time. Okay.
I don't know if we need to dig back into that mindset that I have about that, but
At some point, I'm
I
really
usually try not to
curious.
make predictions.
Maybe prediction, maybe I need to figure out a different way to ask you that question. Like, here's one that I'm seeing. On the smaller scale, like boutique businesses, I'm seeing packaging get much better. My gut is that kind of like chaos branding and packaging is like feeling current, right? So like things going in things that are non-standard packaging. An iPhone box makes perfect sense. It's beautiful, like user experience, it's really polished. I'm seeing a lot more things like being appropriated for packaging for uniqueness. And I think that that's probably a response to either increased competition or potentially sales. So you're adding value by creating an interesting packaging experience, something like that. Like, that's something on the small scale where I'm like noticing it enough that I feel like it is a theme. But yeah, I guess. Well, and it's hard because like last year I did less shows than I usually do. And I feel like at shows is a lot of times where I start to feel the
The
shifts or
movements.
like the
Yes, that's
movements,
true.
because I'll walk and I'm like, oh, that's a lot of this concept, you know, like conceptually there's a vibe towards this. But
Or that vibe that was there
is
seems to
gone.
be drying up or
Right.
whatever it may be.
I think like the last year that you and I did Atlanta, we had both talked about that. We were like, wow, there are way more like micro production brands, like OEM, than there were in previous years. And it was like a drastic increase. Right. Just small things like that. But that's all, that's the only one I guess that I'm really like noticing. The continued meteoric rise of Montana Knife Co. Like,
Yeah.
I think so. That's one that I actually think is having ripples across the entire industry. I think
I
other
agree.
companies are changing their strategies based on Montana Knife Co.'s success.
I 1,000% think they are.
How
Yeah.
freaking cool is that,
Yeah.
though? Like,
Yeah.
if they're seeing that, which I'm sure they are, to just be like, wow, you moved the needle. Like, the concepts and like methods and strategy that they had are like, I think are actually shifting not inconsequential sides of the industry.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think we talked about the Leatherman knives a while back, and it's like, to me, it's obvious. It's
There's something that is felt
yeah.
probably there where you're like,
Yeah.
okay. Yeah. So congrats to them.
Yeah.
I'm
That
kicking
building
ass.
they've got set up, yeah, they're blowing up.
Dude, yeah, it's pretty
Yeah.
cool.
And I've said before, but it probably feels like what coffee makers felt when they saw Black Rifle Coffee coming up. I've always compared
Totally.
the two. They're like the same to me, but
Yeah.
just a different medium, you know what I mean? Because you can
Yeah.
imagine if you're like a coffee roaster
Right.
and you hear about Black Rifle, then you hear about them again
Yeah.
and again.
Yeah.
Then they're in Walmart. Then they're
That's
200. Then
the craziest,
yeah.
man. I
Then they're
know.
dropping an IPO on Wall Street and there's a big banner and it's like, you know what I mean? So it's like that, I feel.
Yeah.
Similar pipeline,
That's a
similar.
really, that's actually a really good analogy because you're kind of taking, you're taking a product that is a lifestyle product, and reassigning it almost. And that it's not, maybe it's not a one-to-one, but that feels like, I'm sure that that Black Rifle was a market upset because I like everybody drinks coffee, but they built a lifestyle brand for people that may have not been like your coffee shop crowd.
Yeah.
Is that a good way of saying
Yep,
that?
yep, yep. Heavy on the ethos with their branding.
Heavy on the ethos and the
Yeah.
branding, and like this is what to me is like proof of the concept that like the best brands are brands that you are part of, like where you're like, this is me.
And it's also a cautionary tale a little bit that if you're a brand that tries to be all the ethoses out there,
Yes.
it's problematic
Yeah.
because that is clear at certain levels that it becomes where they're trying to connect with too many different groups.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute, that ad is not me at all, but that one is. But
But
like,
that one is.
who are you guys now? You know what
Yeah.
I mean? Whereas you look at
Yeah.
some of these companies and it's like, it's just consistent. It's just,
Right.
I expect everything they put out to be in alignment with how I view myself in the world or how I view
Yeah.
myself using their products. You know, so it's like you can't betray the who and the why, I guess, of the brand. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think they're excellent examples of that.
Yeah. That's
So.
something that I've always struggled with, actually. And I think that like my baseline is like community, and I've said that for a long time. But inside of that, like I move around a lot. I could, from a pure brand standpoint, there would probably be an upside for me to like really pick like a lane. But thinking about it over the years, it's like, dude, even with friend groups, I always had friends in different groups, and some
Yeah.
of the times they overlapped and some of the times they didn't. And I just think it's the way my brain works.
Yeah.
I think it's why I have subcategories of brand and I'm always like messing around outside of like the main thing. I mean, I wouldn't have Burnley brand if I would have stayed in my lane as a knife maker.
Right.
It wouldn't have developed, but it was, so there's this push pull because I see it and I'm like, oh, it's so cool to just be so like focused and dialed.
Yeah.
I just
I
don't
think
think I
you're
have that method.
I sense a ton of focus on your brand. I think you're discounting how good you are at alignment. Because I think as a human you're like super curious and super exploratory. But like if like let's say you were to do a hunting knife,
Right.
I know what you would do, or I don't know, but I could imagine that there would be a smirk to it,
Right. Yeah, there's, oh,
because
that's always, that's a great explanation.
you know what I mean? There's
It,
a
you know what it is? It's not, maybe it's not a smirk, but it's that like degree shift. Like
yeah.
I like just being a little bit off. Like it's a, there's a little weirdness to it. There's a little 100%. And it's not, yeah, it's not like a snarky smirk, but
No,
it is
no.
like, it's just like, yeah, there's a playfulness in
There's
some of
an
this stuff.
like I mean this in the best possible way. There's a tint of unseriousness
Yeah,
that
totally.
makes it
Yeah.
friendly
Right.
as opposed to just like we're tough, you know, we
Yeah,
make
it's
it
the,
tough.
there's a reverence to it, I think, sometimes. And that doesn't, a lot of these words that you use to like describe brand and stuff, it's like, it's not necessarily like the outward facing thing, but it is, it's internal, it's the fun thing. Right. Yeah, you can't take this shit too seriously.
Yeah, exactly. And that and
You
I think
can't.
that's a sense that I have with what you do is that like
That's interesting.
it's there's a fun factor that
Yeah.
like there just isn't a fun factor with I'm not like gonna diss other brands, but it's like they have a customer that sees this as like a hardcore serious thing.
Right.
And it's like you go to your page, it's like it's memes.
Yeah.
It's like cool Easter eggs on the
Right.
knives, you know what I mean? And
Right.
it's like that's
It's cool.
just
Yeah.
you. And so it's like you can translate that to hunting, to tactical, to
Yeah.
you've already done it, EDC, to
Right.
high-end jewelry, fashion. It's like there's a for your brand, I feel like it's an ethos of personality type of
Yeah.
like of we're having fun here. This is
Yeah.
serious, but like not really, like
Yeah. Well, even in
smirk.
like the tough, like there's a lot of situations that are serious that you can still choose to have fun in. And I think from like, for me, mastery is that ability to like have fun and like play. It's like is a weird like martial arts like context, but the like the Dog Brothers are like a Kali and like Eskrima group that gets together and has like stick fighting. But it's really playful, like tribe kind of stuff where you're like, you're not, they're playing and they're doing something that's really hard and they're really tough. But it's not presented in like a super like machismo, like hardcore way. And I like that. Yeah. I think like it, I don't know. I probably play a little too much sometimes, but
No,
I'll
I
take
don't
that.
think
That's
so at all.
great. I mean, I don't think of Cohesion and me necessarily like going hand in hand, but I'll take that. That's a nice compliment.
No, and it's what you have is I think really cool because it's this vibe. The vibe is what's cohesive, which makes it able to be applied very diversely.
At different,
Because the
yeah, different
product isn't
levels.
what is cohesive, it's like
Right.
the energy.
Okay.
You know
Yeah,
what I'm
I can see
saying?
that. Yeah.
And so I think that's cool. I think that's really cool.
Hell yeah, I'll take it. Yeah, so I mean, from a brand standpoint right now, I'm not seeing anything that is hitting like MKC. They're pulling air. Like they are, dude, and
Well,
maybe like it's like a Montana thing too, which is pretty sick. Like props, you know, like Go Fast Campers kind of did the same thing, which is interesting, right?
And yeah, there's so much to learn there with the way they started, I think. Man, I honestly I can't even fully gather. I'd love to sit down with them. I don't know if that'll ever happen, but
Yeah,
it's
well, and it's and it what's crazy is I think the way that it started is not unlike, you know, the original thought. Do you remember Simonich knives? Rob Simonich. He was a knife maker, early 2000s, passed away, but had a company that was basically kind of like, it was production, but it was production in the time of mid tech. But that was like having blades produced, having like handles made, doing the assembly, doing finishing, but not really like looking at it as mid-tech, just looking at it as like this is our production line. That's 20 years ago, more than, right? And so it feels like that process has been done by makers. Like it's just a thing that kind of we do, right? You're like, oh, I need more output. How can I do that? You figure it out. They just had a shift where the decisions after the initial decisions, I think, are what really separated them. You know, and how they presented it, how they scaled, what they prioritized, how they marketed the sector of the market that they went after, and then, you know, it's dang cool.
I'm not good at that kind of stuff.
Dude, we're such
I make
nerds.
knives.
We were at a Christmas party the other day, and someone was like, "All right, what's the oldest picture on your phone?" All scrolled back, 2004. Got a picture of a surface grinder. And I was just like, man, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no kidding. That's awesome. That's funny.
Spend a lot of time thinking about this stuff.
Yeah, I know, same. It's interesting because I mean, I don't know how consistent you were in wanting to be a knife maker, but like there was a period when I was 18, 19, it wasn't even a consideration for me. And then it just the magnetism of the trade, the people in the industry, and just the scene and the way that like making these things and designing these things feels just glued me to this track. It was an interesting era there.
It really is sticky, man. You always hear the like old adages, like if you don't want to make knives, don't make one, or like if you don't, or something along those lines. And like, it's kind of true, because by the time you've made one, you kind of have a, you didn't make something good probably, but you see the next steps to make it better, and it doesn't take that long to do it. And then you get to a point where you're like, and this is on like just the hand making side. You get to a point where you're like, oh, I don't like make another one, but I need like a better piece of equipment, because now I'm like, I know how to do this. I really just think it is a, I think it just kind of built pulls you in, like you said. What do you think, coming from a design background? It's a similar thing, right? Because you do a design and then you learn, and then you do more. Do you think that's what it was?
Yeah, and I've said it before, I think, maybe not on the pod, but I was in a one track mind of wanting to do like something automotive related.
Right. Like
And
as a career, not
yeah,
on
as a
your own, but
career.
as a career. Yeah.
As well, or on my own, I don't know how it would work out, but I was basically in school for engineering, mechanical engineering. Drawing cars was all I did, dude. Like, I'd
Yeah.
come home from in high school, I'd come home every day, spend like 4 hours drawing like a picture of a car,
Yeah.
go to school the next day, come back, draw another picture of a car. And I did that all the way into college. And then there was a disconnect that I realized with the cars, which is like nobody gets to design a car. I know that sounds weird,
Yeah.
but those things are not, they're too complex and too elaborate, and it's too much of a machine
Yeah.
to just design one. It's a like
Yeah.
it's a giant corporate structure
Right.
that moves towards this design, and how they organize that all with one compass direction, I don't even understand.
It's insanity.
But yeah, it's like the number of moving parts and all that, and I'm like, I don't know where I'd fit in that, because it's like drawing a car, like that's not a real job, really. There's people that draw them for concept art, but it's
Yeah, I
like,
was gonna say, I guess that's something I don't know. Like when I think about, I get that someone can't design probably a whole car, okay, in time, someone's done that. But there's not necessarily like someone who is designing the concept art that becomes like the visual, like the body of the car.
I mean, there is, because they do clay models and they do, so there's
Yeah.
like, but it's like big teams, and you
Okay.
have, and it's like for some reason it was like it just struck me that I'm like, that doesn't sound that fun, because it's like there's guys that have whole careers and they're known for designing like two cars, and
Right.
it's like, but to, you know, I don't know, it just, I realized the disconnect with like, I'm not actually going to be working on the product, I'm going to be working with like a giant team and
On a
structure, which
part.
doesn't sound that fun, which is the case with a knife, which is that like I can design it Totally.
Yeah,
You
you
know what I
have
mean?
interesting.
And it's
Do you
like the
what?
is like super satisfying to be like, this is the knife. Like, it's my baby. I did this
Yeah,
thing. I
start to
designed it or I
finish.
made it or whatever. And it's like, that's just not a realistic goal unless, you know, there's edge cases in the automotive world, but
For sure.
it's not practical really to think that
No,
way.
it's not a career. It's not a consistency thing, right? I always thought that about Japanese sword makers, which was weird. I was like, wait, there's like five dudes that make a sword, which was crazy. They weren't sole authorship.
Yeah,
You
that's
had
interesting.
someone who forged it, someone who polished it, someone who built the sheath, and fit, and then someone who built the fittings. Like, it wasn't one person. And now there are, right? Like, I'm sure there are, and I'm sure there were. But as a rule, it's like each one of those things was a completely specific focus. And it probably just goes to show that, like, how much work was going into those and the tools that were available. Like, you couldn't do it one person. But do you think that there was something that you saw? My gut is that, like, it's growing up with your dad, right? Kind of like design, make, finish. But do you think there was something else that would have given you that thought? Because I don't necessarily think that if you're going into engineering, I don't know how many people are having that thought. Oh, I'm not going to get to do the whole thing myself.
Right. Well, we had this conversation at the very beginning of this podcast. It might have been the very first episode. Do you remember the Get to the Edge
Ooh,
conversation?
yeah, I do.
Edge and
The
Flow
name,
podcast.
yeah.
That's the feeling, which is that I remember because it was at that time where I was working on the Zenata, which was the dovetail knife, right? No
Yep.
tool, no tool take apart. And I had this realization that if I design this knife and I, as far as I can tell, don't think it's ever been done this way before, and we launch it, I feel like I'm doing something, contributing to an industry where I'm actually
Yeah.
doing something that hasn't been done before. And it's like right out of the gate, it seems like that's possible.
Yeah.
Whereas I was looking at the car track and I was like, to design something in the automotive scene that's truly directionally changing for the industry
Yeah.
is like admirable if you can pull that off, but it's like, I don't know if that's realistic. Whereas
Right.
right now, I can design a knife that feels like it could push a boundary. Does that make
Do you
sense?
have an edge right now? Is there an edge? Like, what's your edge currently?
The knife that I'm working on kind of has that sense to it. Maybe.
Oh man, I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, we don't have to
Yeah.
but you did, and have so do you think there is that always exists? Because like flow state for me is always something that I'm trying to achieve. It doesn't go away. And it is hard. That's a hard one, but there's I feel like, you know, it's a lot easier than the edge of whatever being the goal. Because you have to be seeing something that is the edge. Has that maintained, or is the folder the first thing in a while that has pushed that?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Honestly, I think that strikes at the heart of a lot of my thoughts this year, which is that I haven't been attacking that angle for a while,
Okay.
because I think spinning up the manufacturing was less about that and more about just build infrastructure, do it, you know, best practices. We're not doing
Right.
a whole lot of like pure unique stuff, but it's like it takes 4 years, 5 years worth of just direct energy to just build infrastructure. And now it feels like I'm turning over the leaf of like, okay, now we're back to moving towards something unique and new in the industry coming from us, but we now are doing it with in-house manufacturing. So it's like it does feel like it's been on a bit of a hiatus, which
Yeah.
is a little bit uncomfortable for me, but I didn't notice it at the time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. It's like the boil the frog thing. You're just in it. But you got to a point where you had the bandwidth, whatever it was, that allowed you to start thinking about the folder, which then pushed you back into like your edge, you know, philosophy, and it like restarted it. It's really interesting. Dude, this stuff is fun.
It is a blast.
How fortunate are we actually
Very.
that like this is like day to day,
Very.
like work and conversation?
I know.
Sick.
It is, yeah.
Dude.
Been thinking about that a lot this year, 'cause I've been deciding a lot about which direction to go
Yeah.
this year. How do we grow, or where do we grow? Do we want to grow? Why grow? All these questions that are,
Yeah.
kind of bigger than, larger than life questions almost in a way.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've reminded myself many times that it's like, wow, I'm actually getting to think about this. Like the
Yeah.
fact that I actually have a choice, do I
Yeah.
want this or that
Maddie
is
and I talk
wild.
about that a lot because it's easy to get caught up in like the
Yeah.
day-to-day stressors. And then you're just like, oh man, at least we're getting to ask this.
Yeah.
Like we're getting to have this problem,
Yeah.
you know? It's pretty cool. Dude, I feel like we can wrap it. I feel like that's a good end of the year.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if it was a full recap or anything or yeah, but it feels good. We're doing
Yeah.
good.
That was fun.
Hope you guys are doing good. Have a great holiday. Thank you for listening. And we'll get started off in the new
Yeah.
year again.
Appreciate you guys.
All right, take it easy.
Yeah, peace.